Part 4. The Success of Redemption from the Rise of Antichrist to the Reformation. I come now to the darkest and most dismal day that ever the Christian Church saw, and probably the darkest that ever it will see. From the Rise of Antichrist till the Reformation by Luther and others. The true church in the space was for many hundred years in a state of great obscurity. Like the woman in the wilderness, she was almost hid from sight and observation. In speaking of the events of the space of time, I would, 1. Take notice of the great machinations and works of Satan against the kingdom of Christ. 2. How the Church of Christ was upheld during this time. 1. I would take notice of the great machinations and works of Satan against the kingdom of Christ during this time. Satan had done great things against the Christian church before, but had been baffled once and again. Michael and his angels had obtained a glorious victory. How terrible was his opposition during the continuance of the heathen empire. And how glorious was Christ's victory and triumph over him in the time of Constantine. It pleased God now to prepare the way for a yet more glorious victory over him. He is suffered to renew his strength, and to do the utmost that his power and subtlety can effect. He has a long time to lay his schemes, to establish his interest, and make his matters strong. God suffers him to carry his designs a great length indeed, almost to the swallowing up of his church, and to exercise a high, proud, and almost uncontrolled dominion in the world, a long time before Christ finally conquers and utterly ruins his visible kingdom. This he will do in the time of the destruction of Antichrist, thus gloriously triumphing over Satan, after he has done to the utmost of his power and subtlety. After he has lifted himself highest of all, and dealt most proudly. The two great works of the devil, in this space of time, against the kingdom of Christ, are his creating his anti-Christian and Mohammedan kingdoms, which both together comprehend the ancient Roman Empire. The kingdom of Antichrist the Western, and the Mohammedan kingdom the Eastern, Empire. As the scriptures in the book of Revelation represent it, it is in the destruction of these that the glorious victory of Christ, at the introduction of the glorious times of the church, will mainly consist. And here let us briefly observe how Satan erects and maintains these two great kingdoms of his in opposition to the kingdom of Christ. 1. With respect to the kingdom of Antichrist. This seems to be the masterpiece of all the contrivances of the devil against the kingdom of Christ, and is evidently so spoken of in Scripture. Antichrist is that man of sin, 2 Thessalonians 2:3. Emphatically, as though he were so eminently. He is called Antichrist, which signifies the opponent or adversary of Christ, not because he is the only opponent of Christ. For the Apostle John observes that in his days there were many Antichrists. But yet this is called the Antichrist, as though there were none but he, because he was so eminently, and above all others. So this contrivance of the devil is called the mystery of iniquity, 2 Thessalonians 2:7. We find no enemy of Christ one half so much spoken of in the prophecies of Revelation as this. And the destruction of no enemy is spoken of as so glorious, and so happy for the church. This is a contrivance to turn the ministry of the Christian church into a ministry of the devil, and the angels of the churches into fallen angels. In the tyranny, superstition, idolatry, and persecution, which he sets up, he contrives to make an image of ancient paganism, and more than to restore what was lost by the overthrow of paganism in the time of Constantine. By these means, the head of the beast, which was wounded unto death in Constantine, has his deadly wound healed in Antichrist, Revelation 13:3. And the dragon, that formerly reigned in the heathen Roman Empire, being cast out thence, after the beast with 7 heads and 10 horns rises up out of the sea, gives him his power, and seat, and great authority. And all the world wonders after the beast. I am far from pretending to determine the time when the reign of Antichrist began, which is a point that has been so much controverted among divines and expositors. It is certain that the 1260 days, or years, which are so often in Scripture mentioned as the time of the continuance of Antichrist's reign, did not commence before the year of Christ 479. Because if they did, they would have ended, and Antichrist would have fallen before now. The rise of Antichrist was gradual. The Christian Church corrupted itself in many things presently after Constantine's time, growing more and more superstitious in its worship, and by degrees bringing in many ceremonies into the worship of God, till at length they brought in the worship of saints, and set up images in their churches. The clergy in general, and especially the Bishop of Rome, assumed more and more authority to himself. In the primitive times, he was only a minister of the congregation, then a standing moderator of a presbytery, then a diocesan bishop, then a metropolitan, which is equivalent to an archbishop, then a patriarch. Afterwards he claimed the power of universal bishop over the whole Christian church, wherein he was a post for a while, but afterwards was confirmed in it by the civil power of the emperor in the year 606. After that he claimed the power of a temporal prince, and so was wont to carry two swords, to signify that both the temporal and spiritual sword was his. He claimed more and more authority, till at length, as Christ's vice-regent on earth, he claimed the very same power that Christ would have done, if he was present on earth reigning on his throne, or the same power that belongs to God, and was used to be called God on earth, to be submitted to by all the princes of Christendom. He claimed power to crown princes, and to degrade them at his pleasure. And this power was owned, yea, kings and emperors used to kiss his feet. The emperors received their crowns at his hands. And princes were wont to dread the displeasure of the Pope, as they would dread a thunderbolt from heaven. If the Pope was pleased to excommunicate a prince, all his subjects were at once freed from their allegiance to him, and obliged not to own him any more, on pain of excommunication. And not only so, but any man might kill him wherever he found him. Further, the Pope was believed to have power to damn men at pleasure. For whoever died under his excommunication was looked upon as certainly damned. Several emperors were actually deposed, and ejected, and died miserably by his means. And if the people of any state or kingdom did not please him, he had power to lay that state or kingdom under an interdict, which was a sentence pronounced by the Pope against that state or kingdom, whereby all sacred administrations among them could have no validity. There could be no valid baptisms, or sacraments, or prayers, or preaching, or pardons, till that interdict was taken off. So that people remained, in their apprehension, in a miserable, damnable state, and therefore dreaded it as they would a storm of fire and brimstone from heaven. And in order to execute his wrath on a prince or people with whom he was displeased, other princes must also be put to a great deal of trouble and expense. And as the Pope and his clergy robbed the people of their ecclesiastical and civil liberties and privileges, so they also robbed them of their estates, drained all Christendom of their money. They engrossed most of their riches into their own coffers, by vast revenues, besides pay for pardons and indulgences, baptisms and extreme unctions, deliverance out of purgatory, and a hundred other things. See how well this agrees with the prophecies, 2 Thessalonians 2:3, 4, Daniel 7:20, 21, Revelation 13:6, 7, 17:3, 4. During this time also superstition and ignorance more and more prevailed. The Holy Scriptures by degrees were taken out of the hands of the laity, the better to promote the unscriptural and wicked designs of the Pope and the clergy. And instead of promoting knowledge among the people, they industriously promoted ignorance. It was a received maxim among them, that ignorance is the mother of devotion, and so great was the darkness of those times, that learning was almost extinct in the world. The very priests themselves, most of them, were barbarously ignorant as to any commendable learning, or any other knowledge, than their hellish craft in oppressing and tyrannizing over the souls of the people. The superstition and wickedness of the Church of Rome kept growing worse and worse till the very time of the Reformation, and the whole Christian world were led away into this great defection, excepting the remains of the Christian Church in the Eastern Empire that had not been utterly overthrown by the Turks. The Greek Church, and some others, were also sunk into great darkness and gross superstition, excepting also those few that were the people of God, who are represented by the woman in the wilderness, and God's two witnesses, of which more hereafter. This is one of those two great kingdoms which the devil in this period erected in opposition to the kingdom of Christ, and was the greatest and chief. 2. The Mohammedan kingdom is another of mighty power and vast extent, set up by Satan against the kingdom of Christ. He set this up in the Eastern Empire, as he did that of Antichrist in the Western. Muhammad was born in the year of Christ 570, in Arabia. When he was about 40 years of age, he began to boast that he was the great prophet of God, and proceeded to teach his new invented religion, of which he was to be worshipped as the head next under God. He published his Alcorán, which he pretended he received from the angel Gabriel. And being a subtle crafty man, possessed of considerable wealth, and living among a people who were very ignorant, and greatly divided in their opinions on religious matters, he by subtlety and fair promises of a sensual paradise, gained a number to be his followers. He set up for their prince, and propagated his religion by the sword, and made it meritorious of paradise to fight for him. By such means his party grew, and went on fighting till they conquered and brought over the neighboring countries. And so his party gradually increased till they overran a great part of the world. First, the Saracens were some of his followers, who were a people of Arabia, where Muhammad lived, and who about the year 700, dreadfully wasted the Roman Empire. They overran a great many countries belonging to the empire, and continued their conquests for a long time. These are supposed to be meant by the locusts mentioned in the 9th chapter of Revelation. And then the Turks, who were originally different from the Saracens, became followers of Muhammad, and conquered all the Eastern Empire. They began their empire about the year of Christ 1296. Began to invade Europe in the year 1300. Took Constantinople, and so became masters of all the Eastern Empire, in the year 1453. And thus all the cities and countries where stood those famous churches of which we read in the New Testament, as Jerusalem, Antioch, Ephesus, Corinth, etc., now became subject to the Turks. These are supposed to be prophesied of by the horsemen in the 9th chapter of Revelation, beginning with the 15th verse. And the remains of the Christians in those parts of the world, who are mostly of the Greek church, are in miserable slavery under these Turks, are treated with a great deal of barbarity and cruelty, and are become mostly very ignorant and superstitious. Thus I have shown what great works of Satan were wrought during the space of time in opposition to the kingdom of Christ. 2. I come now to show how the Church of Christ was upheld through this dark time. 1. It is to be observed that towards the former part of this space of time, some of the nations of Christendom held out a long time before they complied with the corruptions and usurpations of the Church of Rome. Though all the world wondered after the beast, yet all nations did not fall in at once. Many of the principal corruptions of the Church of Rome were brought in with a great deal of struggle and opposition. And particularly, when the Pope gave out that he was universal bishop, many churches greatly opposed him in it. And it was a long time before they would yield to his exorbitant claims. And so, when the worship of images was first brought into the churches, there were many who greatly opposed it, and long held out against it. And so with respect to other corruptions of the Church of Rome, those who dwelt nearer to the city of Rome complied sooner. But some that were more remote, were a long time before they could be induced to put their necks under the yoke, and particularly a great part of the churches in England, Scotland, and France, retained the ancient purity of doctrine and worship much longer than many others who were nearer the chief seat of Antichrist. 2. In every age of this dark time, there appeared particular persons in all parts of Christendom, who bore a testimony against the corruptions and tyranny of the Church of Rome. There is no one age of Antichrist, even in the darkest times, but ecclesiastical historians mention many by name who manifested an abhorrence of the Pope and his idolatrous worship, and pleaded for the ancient purity of doctrine and worship. God was pleased to maintain an uninterrupted succession of many witnesses through the whole time, in Germany, France, Britain, and other countries. Private persons and ministers, some magistrates and persons of great distinction. And there were numbers in every age who were persecuted and put to death for this testimony. 3. Besides these particular persons dispersed, there was a certain people called the Waldenses, who lived separate from all the rest of the world, and constantly bore a testimony against the Church of Rome through all this dark time. The place where they dwelt was the Vaudois, or the Five Valleys of Piedmont, a very mountainous country, between Italy and France. It was compassed about with those exceeding high mountains, the Alps, which were almost impassable, and therefore the valleys were almost inaccessible. There this people lived for many ages, in a state of a separation from all the world, having very little to do with any other people. And there they served God in the ancient purity of his worship, and never submitted to the Church of Rome. This probably was the place especially meant in the 12th chapter of Revelation, 6th verse, as prepared of God for the woman, that they should feed her there during the reign of Antichrist. Some of the popish writers themselves own that this people never submitted to the Church of Rome. One of the popish writers, speaking of the Waldenses, says, "The heresy of the Waldenses is the oldest heresy in the world. It is supposed that they first betook themselves to this place among the mountains, to hide themselves from the severity of the heathen persecutions which existed before Constantine the Great. And thus the woman fled into the wilderness from the face of the serpent," Revelation 12, 6, 14. "And to the woman were given two wings of a great eagle, that she might fly into the wilderness, into a place where she is nourished for a time, and times, and half a time, from the face of the serpent. The people being settled there, their posterity continued from age to age in being, as it were, by natural laws, as well as by God's grace, separated from the rest of the world. They never partook of the overflowing corruption. These especially were those virgins who were not defiled when other churches prostituted themselves. But they kept themselves pure for Christ alone. They followed the Lamb, their spiritual husband, whithersoever he went they followed him into this hideous wilderness," Revelation 14, 4, 5. Their doctrine and worship appear to be the same with the Protestant doctrine and worship. And by the confession of popish writers, they were a people remarkable for the strictness of their lives, for charity and other Christian virtues. They lived in external poverty in this hideous country. But they chose this rather than comply with the great corruptions of the rest of the world. Living in so secret a place, it was a long time before they were noticed. But at last, falling under observation, the Romanists went out in mighty armies against them, fell upon them with insatiable cruelty, barbarously massacring and putting to death men, women, and children, with all imaginable tortures. Their enemies continued persecuting them with but little intermission for several hundred years, by which means many were driven out of the valleys of Piedmont. These fled into all parts of Europe, carrying with them their doctrine, to which many were brought over. Their persecutors could not by all their cruelties extirpate the Church of God. So fulfilling his word, Matthew 16, 18, that the gates of hell should not prevail against it. 4. Towards the latter part of this dark time, several noted divines openly appeared to defend the truth, and bear testimony against the corruptions of the Church of Rome. The first and principal of these was a certain English divine, John Wycliffe, who appeared about 140 years before the Reformation. He strenuously opposed the popish religion, taught the same doctrine that the Reformers afterwards did, and had many followers in England. He was hotly persecuted in his lifetime, yet died in peace. But after he was buried, his bones were dug up by his persecutors, and burnt. His followers remained in considerable numbers in England till the Reformation. They were cruelly persecuted, and multitudes were put to death for their religion. Wycliffe had many disciples, not only in England, but in other parts of Europe, whither his books were carried. And particularly in Bohemia, among whom were two eminent divines, John Huss, and Jerome, a divine of Prague, the chief city of Bohemia. These strenuously opposed the Church of Rome, and had many who adhered to them. They were both burnt by the papists for their doctrine. And their followers in Bohemia were cruelly persecuted, but never extirpated till the Reformation.